This week's episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Expedition Unknown. Do you know that there's proof that Robin Hood might have been a real person using underground passageways under England to rob the rich? Or that gold coins discovered on the beaches of Florida might be connected to a Spanish treasure fleet that sank in 1715? On the Expedition Unknown podcast from Discovery, Josh Gates travels the world to investigate history's greatest unsolved mysteries. He'll take you through Russia and Germany looking for stolen objects of great value pillaged by Nazis during World War II, to Nepal to uncover mysterious caves high up the mountains, or to Peru to uncover the meaning behind giant geoglyphs drawn into the earth hundreds of years ago. I met Josh and interviewed him on This Week in Travel. Now it's been 12 years ago. Can't believe it's been that long, but that tells you how long he has been out there looking for stories like he's sharing on the Expedition Unknown podcast. Travel the globe with Josh Gates as he investigates some of humanity's greatest feats and most iconic legends. Listen to Expedition Unknown where you get your podcasts. And thanks to Expedition Unknown for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more. This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Masterclass, where you can learn from the world's best minds. Amateur Traveler, episode 887. Today, Amateur Traveler talks about hot springs and hikes, digital art in a porcelain factory, tea plantations, temples, and shrines, as we go to the Japanese island of Kyushu. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Kyushu. I'd like to welcome to the show Adeline Kuroki, the owner of Savor and Soak Travel Company from SavorandSoak.com, and she's come to talk to us about a region of Japan, Kyushu. And Adeline, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Chris. Happy to be here.
I'm going
to
let you say everything else Japanese from now on because we know my Japanese pronunciation is no good.
Well, happy to do the Japanese pronunciation.
Where is Kyushu and why are we talking about it?
Yeah, I noticed recently you have done a few shows on Japan, your last one about Tokyo, and I just thought, you know what, you should really talk about Kyushu. It's an amazing place and you should go there to eat, to soak in the onsen, and if you're up for it, to hike.
Excellent. And we're talking about further south from the main island of Japan.
Correct. Yeah. So it's about 5 hours by bullet train from Tokyo, just over a 2-hour flight, and to the most northern part. So to Fukuoka City, which is the northern tip of Kyushu Island.
And what is your connection with Kyushu?
So I lived in Fukuoka for about 4 years, and my husband is from Fukuoka, and his family is actually from way back. His mother's family has temples that they run up in the mountainside in Kyushu in Fukuoka Prefecture.
Okay, excellent. And why should someone go to Kyushu?
I think there's so many things to do there. Also, it's a great way to get off the beaten path away from a lot of other tourists. Japan, for good reason, is definitely very popular. It's a very popular destination right now. And so many people, of course, it's easy to fly into Tokyo. And so many people want to go and visit Kyoto, Osaka, a lot of those really popular areas that are really starting to suffer from a lot of over-tourism. And there's so many beautiful places that you can go, other parts of Japan that are just as beautiful and a lot more off the beaten path. And in a lot of ways, I think a lot more welcoming to visitors because there are a lot fewer visitors.
Okay. Excellent. What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
So it's going to be an itinerary focused mostly in the northern half of Kyushu Island. So starting and ending in Fukuoka. and then taking in some historical sites, doing a bunch of onsen, the hot springs, some optional hikes, and also some pottery, some porcelain.
Okay.
So starting in Fukuoka City, they do have a big airport there, and of course their main bullet train station there. So it's on that main bullet train line from Tokyo or Kyoto. In Fukuoka City itself, there's a really beautiful Japanese garden. I'd say probably one of my favorites in Japan. So it's called Yusente Park. And it's got that koi pond in the middle. It's got a little traditional tea house overlooking the koi pond. So you can get your traditional bowl of matcha tea, your little Japanese sweets, and spend a really relaxing afternoon there. So I love that park.
Okay.
Another awesome thing to do in Fukuoka City is the Nishijin Shotengai. So it's this pedestrian street. And it's got a lot of really smaller shops, traditional shops. They've got kimono shops, places selling green tea. They've got a lot of really great restaurants there as well, and a lot of traditional foods, sushi, yakitori, a lot of great food on that street.
And you say traditional, am I going to be finding different traditional things this far south in Japan than I would find in Tokyo, or is it going to be very similar?
So a lot of the dishes are going to be similar, and then there's a kind of a different spin on it. For example, the soy sauce in Kyushu is a lot sweeter than what you would find in Tokyo. So their particular type of ramen, so Hakata ramen or Tonkotsu ramen, is going to be a little bit different again than the traditional one that you would find in Tokyo. So made with pork broth and usually topped with pork and maybe some veggies. And
Okay.
then Fukuoka is also famous within Japan, so people will come from other areas to try the seafood in Fukuoka since it's known for being really fresh. One of the famous seafoods that you can get in Fukuoka is the squid. They have a couple of restaurants where the squid is served to you and it's so fresh and so recently sliced that it is still twitching. And the first time I tried this, I was maybe 9, 10 weeks pregnant.
Oh no.
And we went out to lunch with my in-laws, and they didn't know that I was pregnant yet. And they knew that I liked seafood, and so I had to grin and eat this raw, twitching squid. I was like, this is a lot. I've had it since, and it's very good, but yeah, do not recommend when you're pregnant. It's really not what you want.
No, that does not seem like that would be the best combination.
But in Japan, in the States, when you're pregnant, they're like, don't have the sushi. And in Japan, they're like, make sure it's fresh and make sure it's safe, but it's a great source of nutrients. The doctors are totally on board with it. But yeah, personally, do not recommend the squid if you're pregnant.
What else are we going to do in Fukuoka?
So getting out into the countryside a little bit, and this is possible to do by public transportation, but I would strongly recommend renting a car to be able to get around. And driving this area is very easy. You're driving on the left if you're not used to that, and the
Right.
roads are very tiny. So definitely rent a tiny car so you can drive it and park it on the little roads. But yeah, definitely to get out in the countryside, having a car is a great way to go in Kyushu. So getting out to Itoshima, which is a region just about an hour west of the city proper. So driving along the coast there is really beautiful. It's also a great place if you're into cycling to rent a bike and just bike around that whole peninsula. It's just gorgeous ocean views. There's a really beautiful restaurant that's right along the coast. You're having this fresh sushi, you're looking out at the ocean. And then there's a couple other really great little beachside cafes. It's got this laid-back surfer vibe.
And did you want to recommend the restaurant or the cafes by name or?
Yeah, so this sushi restaurant that's right along the coast there, it's called Ku, and it's on the east side of the Itoshima Peninsula. And
Okay.
then heading west from there's just a lot of great beachside cafes. And there's these stones, this kind of stone shrine that's out in the water called Futamigaura. And it's these two stones sticking up, and they have one of those ropes connecting the two stones, and it's called like the couple's stone. And it's really beautiful to go out, watch the sunset, hang out at a cafe, look out at the water, and look at these stones.
Okay.
So it's a super popular spot for locals on the weekend to head out there. So also in this area, so you're along the beach, but there's mountains like rising, not huge mountains, but mountains rising right up from the beach. So close to this area, there's a lot of small mountains as well. And when you get up into the mountains, there's a lot of shrines and temples. So one that I definitely recommend, a really beautiful temple, is called Raizan Sennoji. And this temple has 100 Buddha statues that are behind the temple, just dotting the hillside. So they're like these moss-covered Buddhas. And it's absolutely gorgeous. A really popular time to go is in the fall, and they've got this 300-year-old maple tree with the beautiful red colors, and then you have this huge temple complex that you can see. And you can go in, and the monks will actually chant for you in Japanese, but they'll chant for you like the history of this temple. And then you can go back and you can see all the Buddha statues. So that one is really cool to see. And it's one
Okay.
that there's like hardly any ever anyone there. So it's really cool to just be exploring this old temple, like almost completely by yourself.
Okay.
And in this area as well, so just down the road from there is a cafe that's in an old soy sauce factory. And it's called Ito
Okay.
Agari. And yeah, the building itself just has a ton of history. It's really beautiful. They've done a really great job with it, having a lot of local produce. There's a lot of farms in this area, so a lot of really fresh local ingredients. And you can hang out and visit the cafe kind of before or after seeing the temple.
Okay, where to next?
Next, heading along the coast, we're heading towards the west coast of Kyushu Islands and getting almost all the way to the coast. And you're getting to the towns of Imari and Arita, and they are famous for their pottery, their porcelain. They had some Korean potters hundreds of years ago who I guess had discovered these deposits of clay that were really good for making pottery. And so this area is nationally very well known for its porcelain. And there's a lot of really nice porcelain shops here as well, but something that I like doing, it's called the Arita Treasure Hunt. And it's this old factory, and it is completely filled with old porcelain that just never got sold. And you can pay 5,000 yen, so about $40, $45 for the big kind of shopping basket, and you can completely fill that up with anything that you find in there. So I
Okay.
have a huge collection at home of porcelain, but that one's super fun to just explore and sort through all these beautiful old dishes.
Now it's going to tend to be not whole sets of porcelain.
Correct. Yeah. So some are a lot aren't. Most aren't. There's the majority of it is all going to be like white and then like a soft blue. So
Okay.
everything will match. Everything will go together. It is a lot of that blue. And then there's like a separate room where things are in different colors. But for the majority of it is all the blue.
Okay, interesting.
And then from there, heading down to Takeo Onsen. And this town is in Saga Prefecture. So this is a prefecture that even Japanese people are like, no one ever goes here. Really off the beaten path, but really pretty. So you get down here to Takeo Onsen and they have their Sakura Mon. So Mon being gate. So it's this giant two-story gate going into the town. And the bottom story looks like a big gate that the road goes through. And then on the top, it's almost like a little temple perched on the top of this gate that you walk through to get into the old town. And the waters here
Okay.
are locally very famous, like very high in sodium bicarbonate. So very thick textured water, like as you soak into it.
Okay.
And then from there,
And so we're
you.
staying at the, is this a ryokan? Are we staying there? Or are we soaking in the waters? Or what are we doing there with our, are we washing our porcelain or?
Yes, I'd recommend stopping spending the night in Takeo. Yeah, one of the ryokans, the traditional Japanese
Okay.
inns. And so, with those, if you haven't heard of a ryokan before, very traditional style where they have a full set dinner for you. And this is going to be a 10, 12 course dinner with a lot of local cuisine, a lot of very local produce as well. And they often change their menu seasonally. And then after that, you go soak in the hot springs. So these generally, you could have a private hot spring in your room, but traditionally it's going to be gender separated baths and bathing in the nude. And they'll give you your yukata, a lightweight summer kimono, and you're walking around. It could be like walking around the onsen town or walking around your ryokan in your yukata. And usually just in your socks or barefoot as you're on the tatami flooring. And then usually it's going to be again that tatami flooring in your room. Some rooms do have kind of hybrid Western style, Japanese style rooms. A lot of them are going to be those futon mattresses laid out on the floor. So when you go down to dinner, they'll come in, take away your table, lay out your futon so that when you come back in the evening, your bed is all set up for you.
Oh, the ryokans I've been to, I ate in a separate place. I didn't eat in the same sleeping room. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, and it depends on the property. So some of them will have the dinner laid out in your room, and some of them it'll be in a separate dining room. And then while you're gone, they set up the bedroom for you.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by Masterclass. I love learning new things, both on this podcast and through some of the other media that I consume, podcasts, books, etc. But if you're like me, you want to go deeper. So where can you learn from the most remarkable people? That's Masterclass. And that's one of the things I've enjoyed about the different classes that I've done with Masterclass, whether it be The Art of Negotiation by Chris Voss, who's an FBI negotiator, or Amy Poehler, who talks about using improv as a way of getting prepared for anything. There's something very unique about this offering. It's March as this is coming out, and most people have already forgotten their New Year's resolutions. Only about 8% of people will carry it out through the year. Don't just talk about improving, be the person you want to be, and learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Masterclass offers 180 world-class instructors. So whether you want to learn cooking and are doing so with Gordon Ramsay, or you want to learn about writing and you're doing so with James Patterson, Masterclass has a class for you. You get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. There are over 200 classes to choose from, with new classes added every month. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/traveler. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/traveler. Again, that's masterclass.com/traveler. And thanks to Masterclass for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Yeah. So another thing that I'd recommend in the Takeo area, so spending the night in your ryokan, but after checking in, once it gets dark, going up to Mifuneyama, so Mount Mifume. And here they have one of my favorite Team Lab exhibits. And so Team Lab, you've probably seen the one in Tokyo, the new Team Lab Borderless that just opened up, I think actually today as we're recording, their new exhibit in Azabudai. But they have one in down here in Saga in Mifune. And it's
And
outside
I'm not
in.
sure I know what we're talking about.
So the Team Lab exhibit, it's a Japanese-based arts collective, and they do a lot of exhibits where they're playing with lights and sometimes sound. They have ones where you can draw, I think the one at Borderless, where you draw your own fish and then you can set it free in the wild and it's actually made of
Okay.
lights and it'll be projected up on the wall.
Got it. Like the Digital Mori Museum in
Yes, that
Tokyo.
one exactly.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Now I'm following
It's really hard to explain without pictures. I'm just
you.
like the thing with the lights.
Interactive light display artwork. Boy, that sure
Exactly.
doesn't capture it,
Yes.
does it?
Yes, they've got one of these in this Japanese garden on the hillside here in Saga. Yeah,
Okay.
and it's really beautiful as they have like these koi projected onto the actual ponds. They've got a little tea room where you can go in. And you get your bowl of green tea, and then they have flowers projected into your actual bowl of tea. So you're sipping this tea, and little petals are coming out of the tea and floating away across the table.
Okay.
So that one is super fun to go to. And then from Takeo, heading back west now onto the region of Yame. Yame is famous for its tea. It's actually, I think, the fifth or the sixth most popular tea region in Japan. And depending on what time of year you're there, if you're there during the harvest, so either late April or early fall, I would definitely recommend going and helping to pick tea in Yame. And then trying some of the freshly picked, some of the local tea, because it is so good. And they use a lot of the traditional tea harvesting methods in Yame. So starting even about 20 years ago, really trying to limit their use of any artificial pesticides. And they're getting back into a lot of the hand harvesting of the tea. So when you're using the big machines to harvest tea, you can usually only do one harvest a year in the fall because the machine is taking so much off the top of the plants. But when you're harvesting it by hand and you're taking like two leaves and a bud, off the top, and then the plant still has plenty of time to grow and plenty of leaves on the top to do a second harvest in the fall. So that's definitely a really great experience. But even if you're not there during that time, it's definitely a great place to check out, to try some green tea and to try matcha flavored everything. Matcha flavored ice cream, a lot of matcha products there.
Now, is there just the one tea plantation? Yame is a region or one plantation?
So it's a region, and
Okay.
they're very small tea farms. So
Okay.
usually they're kind of family owned, and it's going to be on their side of the hill is here's their little tea plantation. So a lot of them are very small, and there's a lot in this area. And then from here, from Yame, we're heading south, and we're heading towards Kurokawa Onsen. And I'd say within Kyushu, Kurokawa Onsen is probably best known for the quality of the onsen, the quality of the water. And this is definitely for foreign tourists, I'd say, very off the beaten path, but it's got this sweet little onsen town. So you've got this kind of staircase that comes down the side of the hill and a bunch of tiny roads that are coming off this one little staircase with all the little shops, a lot of little onsen, and a number of the ryokan as well. So I would recommend staying in Kurokawa again for that ryokan experience, that full dinner, the onsen, and the full breakfast again in the morning that's served at the inn. And Kurokawa
Okay.
itself is really nice to walk around, and it's very close to the Aso region, which is known for its dairy. So it's got very good yogurt, very good ice cream here. Definitely worth a try.
Okay. I don't tend to think of yogurt and dairy when I'm thinking of Japan.
No, very unusual thing. But yeah, in this area, it's very, very good quality yogurt, I would say. And the only cows that I think I've ever seen in Japan, I've seen in this area.
Well, that we know there's beef cattle somewhere.
They've got to be hiding somewhere. And then from here, so one last stop before heading back to Fukuoka. So I'd also recommend a Yufuin Onsen. So the little town of Yufuin is again one of those towns that a lot of Japanese tourists will go for the weekends, put on their yukata, so those summer kimonos, and they're walking up and down that main street. And this town has a little pond as well that's really beautiful in the spring with the cherry blossoms and really beautiful in the fall with all the autumn leaves.
Okay. Is there anything particular we're doing in town besides going in the onsen?
We're going in the onsen and we're eating mostly. From what I've seen, when Japanese people go on vacation, it's all about the food. So we're getting that local food. And it's really popular to pick up snacks as well to bring back, like for all your friends, all your coworkers from wherever you visited that weekend. So there's a lot of shops as well that'll sell big packages of whatever their particular famous snack from that region is.
And what is their famous snack from this region that I'm bringing back for my coworkers?
From this region, it's going to be a lot of the different flavored rice crackers, the sembe.
Okay.
And they have a lot of shops that will let you sample them. And there's some more like soy sauce, normal flavors. There's some that are like more of a mentaiko flavor, so like a spicy fish egg flavor.
Okay.
A lot of more wild ones as well. So, yeah, definitely worth a taste.
Okay.
And then from here, heading back to Fukuoka. On the way, I would definitely recommend stopping at Dazaifu, so a little town about 30 minutes south of Fukuoka itself. And here is Dazaifu Tenmangu, so a giant shrine here. And the popular food here is actually one of my favorites. So it's mochi, but it's going to be a grilled mochi. So they
Okay.
take the normal round mochi and they have, it almost looks like a panini press. And you press it down and you're grilling it from both sides. And so the outside is like a little bit crispy, a little bit warm. And then you have the red bean paste inside. And it's very good, but you're definitely not taking this one to go. Because once it's been grilled, it's good for probably about 30 minutes and you really want to eat it.
So,
Okay.
as we talk about this itinerary, what really stands out for you in the Kyushu area that's going to be very different for people who think they've been to Japan.
Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing is probably the hot springs, just the number of different hot springs towns that
Okay.
are in this area because of all the volcanic activity with Mount Aso being nearby. And I would say the proximity to nature as well. You can be 20 minutes outside of Fukuoka and be up in the mountains and hiking and see Absolutely
Well, and
nobody else.
you promised us hiking, but you haven't given us any hikes yet. So what hikes are we going to do while we're down here?
Okay, so when we are in Itoshima, so the peninsula just an hour from Fukuoka, there's a really lovely hike and it's called Mount Tateyoshi. And this is one of those mountains. Again, it's a small mountain, but it's rising right up out of the beach. So you are all the way on the western end of Itoshima. You're at Keya Beach. And right from that beach, there's the trailhead. And you're pretty much climbing, no like ropes or hand and footholds, but you're pretty much scrambling up these rocks, heading straight up off the beach. And the hike itself takes probably 45 minutes to an hour, depending on how quick you're going. You get up to the top and you've got almost a 360 degree view of the ocean. So it's absolutely beautiful. And then hiking back down, so you can come back down the way that you came up, but there's also a way that you can head down to this little local road. So you're not scrambling down the rocks and you can be just on this little one lane road. And you're walking past some fields, some rice paddies, some little farmhouses, like circling back down to Kea Beach.
Okay, so that's one.
That's
What
one.
other
All
hikes
right.
are we going to do along this itinerary?
Okay, from the temple that we talked about, so Raizan Temple.
Yep.
And just behind the temple,
This
there's
is
a
the
trail.
couple's shrine or the right
This is the one
temple.
with the Buddha statues.
Got it. The 100 Buddhas. Okay.
The 100 Buddhas, yep. So right behind this temple, there's a trailhead, and you're going to go up to the top of Raizen, so Mount Rai. And this, again, I would say probably an hour and a half up to the summit here. And again, not a super high mountain, but this is along the ridge line. So all of these mountains are the border between Fukuoka Prefecture and Saga Prefecture. So there's not a lot of roads that are crossing over these mountains. A lot of them are going around. And all along this ridge line, there is a trail that connects all of these summits. And I believe it's about 70 kilometers of trail altogether that would go between the prefectures all the way to the coast at the west end. But you can just go directly from the temple up to the top of Raizen. And again, on a clear day, you can see out to the ocean. So really beautiful views here. And then in the other direction, you're looking out at Saga Prefecture.
Got it. Okay.
This one I would recommend is just doing an out and back. You can make this into a loop, but then you're going to end up having to do public transportation to get back to where you left your car. Although if you're feeling really ambitious, 70 kilometers, you can just keep going.
I
All the way
am
to the
not
ocean.
feeling that ambitious, but okay.
Back down in Arita and Imari, where we're looking at the porcelain. So very close to Arita City, Mount Kurokami. So this is just about the trailhead starting probably about 20 minutes outside of Arita. And this hike is a little bit longer, so it's not coming right up from the coast. So it's a little bit less steep, but a little bit of a longer hike up to the summit. And this one, you're walking along water. So you've got a little stream, you've got little waterfalls, very small waterfalls on your way up. So this one's a really pretty one. That sound of water as you're walking along. And more about 2 hours up to the summit for Mount Kurokami.
Excellent.
So we're coming back from Yufuin and we're heading to Dazaifu with a big shrine there. So you can come into the main area of Dazaifu and there's Dazaifu Tenmangu, so that giant shrine that's there. And then just about 10 minutes outside of town is Kamado Jinja, so Kamado Shrine. And this is actually, it's a bit unique, so it's a newer built shrine. So the grounds themselves are very old and it's like the old stonework and everything, but the shrine, the wooden shrine, that building itself is quite new. And it is the shrine that's dedicated to couples and love. And just behind this shrine is a trailhead, and you can head up to the summit of Homanzan that starts just behind this shrine. And this is actually one of the tallest peaks in Kyushu. And you don't have views of the ocean from the summit here, but you're looking down into Dazaifu, down into that big shrine there, and then out again into the countryside. So a lot of green, a lot of these tea fields that you're looking out at the
Got it.
summit of Homanzan here.
Now, you've got us hiking and going in the onsens. What season would you recommend this trip for?
So I would say any time that's not July, August,
Too hot
Kyushu
in
is
July and
definitely,
August.
Yeah, it's so humid.
Okay.
But the rest of the year is really great for hiking. Yeah, so they probably add June to that. Yeah, July and August are just going to be hot and humid. June is going to be super rainy. So you might
Okay.
end up being rained out a lot of those days. But the rest of the year is really beautiful for hiking. Of course, in the spring, you've got the plum blossoms and then the cherry blossoms. Not as much of the fall foliage in Kyushu as you would see further north. But even in like the winters here are very mild. There's hardly ever snow. So even I've done some of these hikes in the snow, but there's a dusting and it's totally fine in normal sneakers or hiking boots to hike in the winter here.
And is there a favorite day of year or festival or something else that would bring you down to this area?
So in Fukuoka for New Year's, it's a really fun time to be in this area. So of course in all of Japan, you've got to do your New Year's shrine visits. And you pray to the gods for the next year and you get your omomori, your lucky charms for the new year. But in
Okay, I
Fukuoka
don't know about
Prefecture.
the lucky charms here. Tell me more.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so the omomori is your lucky charms. And it's usually a little cloth, like embroidered cloth, that's about 1 inch by 2 inches. And they
Okay.
have different ones that are for health or for succeeding in business or school, some that are specifically for driving safety, or some that are just for
Okay.
general luck. And you can get these at pretty much any shrine. And then some specific shrines, like Kamado Jinja, is for couples, and so they'll have omomori that's for relationships or love.
Okay.
And other shrines that kind of have their specific omomori, but a lot of them have these same general ones. So anywhere in Japan, you would do your New Year's shrine visit and you get your new omomori because the one from last year, you can't carry that anymore. It's not lucky anymore. So you have to get a new one at the start of the year.
Got it. Time release luck, basically.
Yes,
All the
exactly.
luck runs out by December 31st. Good to know.
Yeah, so you've got to do your shrine visit in that first week of the new year. And then Fukuoka Prefecture takes it a step further, where traditionally you do three shrine visits within the first week. So this is super fun because then you can do like a big shrine, get like the shrine festival atmosphere. Everyone's there for the new year. But then people do like to visit some of the smaller shrines as well. So even lesser visited shrines will definitely have more people there. That first week of New Year's doing their shrine visits.
And I know when I was in, I guess it was Kyoto, we would have people tell us this shrine is where students go to pray when they want success with school and such. So are people going to different shrines depending on what kind of luck they want? Or tell me how this works.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, Dazaifu Tenmangu is definitely a popular one for students. For their exam results and get the student omomori. Yeah, so they're definitely planning shrine visits based on what the shrine is known for. But that's also why the kind of the three shrine visits is fun because then you can do the big shrine, the one where you really want your exam success or whatever it is that you're looking for, and then visit maybe a shrine that you haven't been to in a while or a new shrine to
Okay.
round out your three.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Is there a way that you have connected, obviously, to a local in this particular part of Japan? How do you connect to locals? What's the best way, as somebody who is not a fluent Japanese speaker, to connect to people while you're on a trip in this area?
Yeah, so actually, I met my husband in a English language bar in Fukuoka.
Okay, an English language bar. Okay. So that is a
So
bar for people who want to practice their English, or is a bar targeting Western customers?
both, yeah.
Okay.
So it's a lot of expats. It's some people who are just on
Huh.
trips, traveling through. There is a university there that has a lot of exchange students, so a lot of them will be there. And then a lot of locals who want to work on their English or who have lived abroad and moved back and want to connect with people from all
Huh.
over the world.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so this bar is actually, it's in a really fun area of Fukuoka. It's called Daimyo, is the name of the neighborhood. And the bar is called Cheers Bar.
Well, there you go. Okay.
So I would definitely recommend checking it out. Yeah, it's a great place. So the owner himself, I know his name is Chuck, and he has amazing recommendations, and all the bartenders there speak fluent English and Japanese. So you can go in, not know any Japanese, get some good recommendations, meet people, and start off your night there for sure.
Okay, interesting. And you say start off your night. What is the bar scene in this part of Japan runs from what hours to what hours here?
You're going to be kicked out at about 4 or 5 in the morning. But on the weekends in the daimyo area, people will be out until 4 or 5 in the morning.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to be the one who's kicked out at 4 or 5 in the morning, but okay.
Oh, no, those days are behind me, but yep.
What else do people need to know before they head down here to Kyushu?
Yeah, I would say that compared to being in Tokyo or Kyoto, there is definitely a lot less English that's spoken. Signage, public transport, walking around, everything is still going to be signed, and the announcements are all in Japanese and English, and a
Okay.
lot of times in Korean as well. There's a lot of Korean tourists that come over on the ferry from Busan to
Okay.
Fukuoka. But yeah, a really popular second language is Korean here as well.
Interesting.
But I would
Okay.
say that people are super friendly. People are really willing to help you out, even if there is that language barrier. And another great place to, sometimes a great place to connect with locals is at the onsen, actually. So if you're going to onsen, sometimes you just want to go in and you want to relax and you don't want to talk to anybody. But sometimes I've gone and there's a lot of little old ladies that are just like, "Wow, you're not Japanese. Where are you from? What are you doing?" And have sweet little chats like that as well. Really meeting locals at the
Got
onsen
it.
is kind of
Although,
fun.
if I'm running into the little old ladies, it means that I went in the wrong one.
And they will very politely kick you right out and show you where to go.
Good to know. Good to know. Excellent. Anything else people need to know before they pack their bags and head down here?
I guess from a practical standpoint, if you are renting a car, you do need to have the international driver's license,
Okay.
which is really just that translated piece of paper that you need to get at least a few days before you travel.
Right.
They will ask for that when you rent a car here.
And if you're in the US, you can usually pick one up from AAA if you're a AAA member.
Correct. Yeah. In most places, they'll do the photo, the document, everything all together. And when you're driving in the countryside, one thing I did not realize at first when I started driving in Japan is you have to stop for train tracks, all of the
Okay.
train tracks, which is not a thing in the US.
So a stop sign is implied.
Yes, there will
Okay.
be stop signs, but you just have to know, yeah, that you're stopping at every single rail crossing.
Good to know.
And that you're never turning, so you're driving on the left side of the road, so it'd be like a left
Right.
turn on red. You can never left turn on red in Japan.
Okay.
Just because there are so many pedestrians and bikes, I would imagine. So don't turn on red.
Excellent. As we start to wrap this up, you're standing in the prettiest spot in the whole island. Doesn't even have to be just what you've covered so far. Where are you
Okay.
standing and what are you looking at?
I would say I'm probably standing at the top of that mountain we talked about, so Mount Tateyashi. So having just climbed up from Kea Beach,
Okay.
and standing and
With
just
nearly
looking out at the ocean.
360 degrees of ocean around you.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
That's my personal, probably favorite spot on the islands.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Kyushu.
A lot of it, I think, as an American living there, I always think it's so funny the concept of distance. Whereas in the US, we think nothing of getting in the car and driving 3, 4 hours for a weekend trip.
Sure.
And in Japan, they're like, "It's an hour away." I'm like, "Yeah, great, let's go." Very local with this idea that things an hour away are really far, especially by car, where you could easily drive the whole island in a day. But it's not something that someone from Kyushu would ever do.
Interesting. And if you had to summarize Kyushu in just 3 words, what 3 words would you use?
Onsen, seafood,
Okay.
and friendly.
Excellent. Excellent. Our guest again is Adeline Kuroki, the owner from Savor and Soak Travel Company. And I'm going to guess that when you take people on tours, there's some onsen soaking involved.
Oh my gosh, I try to convince everybody that they should go in the onsen.
The Savor and Soak, I believe, that came out in the itinerary that you put in for us there. But you're basically doing local tours of this area or other areas of Japan as well.
Yeah, so all over Japan, but of course, I know a lot about Kyushu. But when I have people coming to Japan and maybe it's their only trip that they're going to do in Japan, they want to see Kyoto, they want to see Tokyo, a lot of other places. But I always really highly recommend Kyushu because I think it just has so much to offer.
Excellent. And do we want to send people to your best post on your blog for Kyushu? Where would we send them?
I recently did one on five foods to try in Fukuoka.
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Kyushu.
Thanks so much, Chris.
This episode of Amateur Traveler is sponsored by ButcherBox. The best meals start with the best ingredients, and ButcherBox has high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. They have 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping always. If you're looking for inspiration what to do with a fine cut of meat, they provide recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks. I think it's time for me personally to up my game on what I can do with a good steak. But email me and I'll send you my port wine reduction and blue cheese sauce recipe that is to die for. That'll go well with your first order. ButcherBox is giving our listeners free ground beef for life for your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order. Use my link, butcherbox.com/traveler, and use code TRAVELER to get free ground beef for life, plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/traveler and code TRAVELER. And thanks to ButcherBox for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
A special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. If you're interested in learning more about what you get as a patron of the show, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. And speaking of patrons, I heard from Savio Wong, who is a patron and former guest on the show. Way back in the day, we did a show on Botswana. And Savio wrote about the show we did on Tokyo. I was in Tokyo in December, so I didn't listen to this episode until after my trip. However, I enjoyed this episode and concur with most of the recommendations. Before my trip, I did listen to an earlier episode on Tokyo. I spent 5 days there and stayed at APA Hotel in Shinjuku. Room was small, but great location and reasonably priced, about $90 US a night, and just a few minutes to walk from the Shinjuku National Garden. APA is a chain in Tokyo, and there are two of them in Shinjuku. The reason I know that is because I heard the staff at the front desk telling a couple poor souls who had arrived with several pieces of luggage that they had booked the other one. Hotels in Shinjuku are likely more expensive than other districts because the subway system is so effective and cheap. I think that any hotel near a subway station will be fine. I used a book called Tokyo Maze, 42 walks in and around the Japanese capital, as my main guide, and just picked up a couple walks each day. For book lovers, the Jimbokcho district definitely is worth spending at least half a day in to check out all the bookstores. The printing museum also worth a quick stop, particularly if you're interested in some of the historic, or is it historical? I think it's historic, documents about Manchuria before and during World War II. As your guest and you said, Tokyo is actually affordable for travelers. There are a lot of cheap eats. The most expensive meal I had was sushi breakfast at the Tsukuji Outer Market. I think it was $60 US. A hearty bowl of ramen lunch is often cheaper than a fancy latte. A quick snack at the 7-Eleven or a Lawson convenience store is an experience that should not be passed up. Thanks so much, Savio. And you asked historic and historical. My understanding is something that is old is historic, and something that is about history, like the Historical Society, is historical. But people use it almost interchangeably. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening. Cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not.